In March 2002, Arthur Andersen employed 85,000 people across the globe. By September of that year, the firm had virtually ceased to exist, not because of bankruptcy, not because of a hostile takeover, but because of something far simpler, a paper shredder. For nearly 9 decades, Arthur Andersen stood as one of the most respected names in accounting. The firm audited some of the largest corporations in the world. Its employees wore their company ID badges with pride. The Andersen name meant something: integrity, precision, trust. And then, in less than 6 months, it was gone. This is the story of how one of the big five accounting firms collapsed. Not slowly, not predictably, but catastrophically. And at the center of it all was a battle between two forces. One man trying to save a company's reputation, and another company whose fraud would destroy everything in its path. Arthur Edward Andersen was born in Plano, Illinois, in 1885. His parents were Norwegian immigrants. His father died when Arthur was 16, leaving him to support his mother and siblings. He worked during the day and attended night school at the University of Illinois. By age 23, he became the youngest certified public accountant in Illinois. In 1913, Andersen and a partner founded Andersen, Delaney & Company in Chicago. The partnership dissolved within 5 years, but Andersen kept the firm going, renaming it Arthur Andersen & Company. From the beginning, he built the firm on a single principle: integrity above all else. The defining moment came early. In 1914, a railway executive demanded that Andersen approve financial statements that Andersen knew were misleading. The executive was a major client. Losing them could have destroyed the young firm. Andersen refused. He reportedly told the executive, "There's not enough money in the city of Chicago to induce me to change that report." The railway company fired him, but word spread. Other companies wanted an auditor who couldn't be bought. By the 1920s, Arthur Andersen had become one of the most trusted names in American accounting. Arthur Andersen himself died in 1947, but the culture he built survived him. The firm expanded internationally. It pioneered consulting services, advising clients, not just on compliance, but on strategy, technology, operations. By the 1980s, Arthur Andersen had become a global powerhouse, one of the Big Eight accounting firms, later the Big Six, then the Big Five, as consolidation swept the industry. But the firm was changing in ways its founder might not have recognized. In the 1950s and 1960s, Arthur Andersen began offering consulting services alongside traditional audit work. At first, this seemed natural. Accountants understood business operations, so why not advise on efficiency and systems? But over the decades, consulting became far more lucrative than auditing. By the 1990s, the consulting division was generating more revenue than the audit practice. And that created a problem: two very different cultures under one roof. Auditors prided themselves on skepticism and independence. Consultants prided themselves on building client relationships and solving problems. The consultants resented subsidizing the auditors. The auditors resented being treated as the less important part of the firm. In 1989, the consulting division was renamed Andersen Consulting. By 2000, the split had become irreconcilable. The two sides entered arbitration. In August 2000, an arbiter ruled that Andersen Consulting could separate completely, but it would have to pay Arthur Andersen $1 billion and give up the Andersen name. Andersen Consulting agreed. On January 1st, 2001, it rebranded as Accenture and became fully independent. Arthur Andersen, the audit and tax firm, was now on its own. It had lost its most profitable division. It needed to prove it could still compete, and it needed revenue. That desperation would prove fatal. In Houston, a company called Enron was making headlines. Founded in 1985 as a natural gas pipeline company, Enron had transformed itself into an energy trading giant. By the late 1990s, it was the seventh largest company in America by revenue. Its CEO, Jeffrey Skilling, was hailed as a visionary. Its chairman, Kenneth Lay, was a fixture in Washington. Arthur Andersen had been Enron's auditor since 1985. Over the years, the relationship had grown extremely close. Andersen didn't just audit Enron's books. It also provided consulting services, internal audit work, and tax advice. In 2000 alone, Enron paid Arthur Andersen $52 million, $25 million for auditing, $27 million for consulting and other services. That kind of money created conflicts of interest. Auditors are supposed to be independent watchdogs, but when a single client generates tens of millions in fees, the incentive shifts. The question becomes, how do we keep this client happy? Inside Enron, aggressive accounting was the norm. The company used special purpose entities, off-balance sheet partnerships, to hide debt and inflate profits. Enron's chief financial officer, Andrew Fastow, personally profited from these entities, creating a web of transactions that were almost impossible to follow. Arthur Andersen's job was to audit these financial statements and confirm they were accurate. But Andersen's Houston office was deeply embedded with Enron. Some Andersen partners had worked at Enron. Some Enron executives had worked at Andersen. The line between auditor and client had blurred. In February 2001, a new Enron employee named Sharon Watkins began reviewing the company's financials. She was shocked by what she found. The off-balance sheet partnerships seemed designed to deceive investors. She wrote an anonymous letter to Kenneth Lay, warning that Enron could implode in a wave of accounting scandals. Lay ordered an internal review. Arthur Andersen was brought in to help. The firm concluded there were no major issues. Enron's stock continued to rise. But behind the scenes, cracks were forming. By October 2001, Enron's stock was collapsing. The company announced a $638 million loss and a $1.2 billion reduction in shareholder equity. The Securities and Exchange Commission opened an inquiry. On October 23rd, David Duncan, the Arthur Andersen partner in charge of the Enron audit, sent an email to the Houston team. The subject line read, SEC inquiry. Duncan reminded his team of the firm's document retention policy. That policy allowed, indeed required, the destruction of non-essential documents that were no longer needed. But in practice, what followed was something very different. Over the next 2 weeks, Andersen employees in Houston shredded thousands of documents related to Enron. Boxes of paper were fed into shredders, computer files were deleted, email threads were purged. The shredding was so intense that shredding machines jammed and had to be repaired. On November 8th, Arthur Andersen received a subpoena from the SEC. The shredding stopped immediately. But by then, an enormous amount of evidence was gone. Internally, Andersen executives were horrified.